You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, as the Kitsilis First Nation nears federal and provincial recognition of their treaty, neighboring nations are not happy with how the process has unfolded. This week, Kakatla issued a statement calling for a pause to all Kitsilis treaty negotiations, quote, until free, prior, and informed consent can be given and protocol agreements can be made with BC and the Kitsilis First Nation. Today, we speak with Bruce Watkinson, Joint Committee Co-Chair of the LSHH, the Lhu-Sa-Haks-Hulam-Wilnat, formerly known as the Joint Committee on Reconciliation and Treaty Response. That coming up in just a minute. Also on the program today, Pam dives into a training session for junior emergency support services in Telqua. Stay with us.
My name is Bruce Watkinson. I'm with the Kakatla Nation, and I'm based out of Prince Rupert.
Great, Bruce. Thanks so much for being with us here on CICK News. As I mentioned, we heard yesterday that the Kakatla is calling on the Kitsilis and the federal and provincial governments to pause the treaty negotiations that have been going on for some time. Maybe you can walk me through what are you asking? What is the nation asking to pause the Kitsilis treaty?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Dan. There's two main issues here. One is the actions of the provincial government and their legislation, Bill 21. And we're asking the provincial government to put a pause to that until they've concluded negotiations and discussions with Kakatla. You know, we believe that free, prior, and informed consent from Kakatla needs to be given any time the provincial government has actions that affect their rights. So that's one of the issues. The other main issue is the relationship that we have with Kitsilis. It's well known that there's a lot of overlap of territories and claims with Kakatla territory, and we think Kitsilis First Nation to sit down and negotiate a protocol agreement with Kakatla. So those are the two main issues: the relationship we have with BC and Canada, and the relationship that we have with Kitsilis. And they're related but separate pieces of this puzzle that need to be solved before that we think that anybody can move forward.
I know one of the things that was mentioned was the council that Kakatla has to deal with this with a treaty response, but also there are pieces to this that fall into the reconciliation file. What has been happening and what has Kakatla been discussing with, you know, the two entities, the federal and provincial governments, during all this time? Because I know this is not something that just came out of nowhere in these last, you know, couple of months. This has been going on for years. So what is the process that Kakatla has been engaging in to make sure that the province and the federal government understands some of the complexities there on the coast?
Yeah, thanks. So we have a group, we rely quite heavily on the hereditary chiefs and matriarchs for guidance in these types of matters that affect our rights and our title and our overall territory. And from that group, we have a bit of a working group, a working committee that we refer to as Lhu-Sa-Haks-Hulam. And it's basically the translation is the group to make it right. And so we represent the hereditary chiefs of Kakatla, and we deal with the provincial and federal governments on issues like this to make sure that our rights and title are being respected. And so there's a lot of, as you can guess, there's a lot of letter writing back and forth about their duty to consult and accommodate. And in fact, going as far with the provincial government, they have tendered an accommodation offer, but it in nowhere near meets the needs of Kikala, and we don't think it goes far enough. We quite frankly think it's an insult to what they've offered us in terms of accommodation. So those negotiations continue. And the Kitsilis side, yeah, that same group that represents the British Dairy Chiefs has offered to meet with Kitsilis leadership. And back to last fall, when we called for a leadership meeting between Kitsilis and Kikala on a neutral site down in Vancouver, they showed up with consultants and lawyers, while we showed up with hereditary leaders. So, yeah, it's been a frustrating process. We continue to negotiate, and we continue to take the advice of our hereditary leadership. In fact, it was 2 weeks ago on May 6th that our hereditary leadership, our chiefs and matriarchs, voted unanimously to reject both the accommodation offer that Canada and BC put forward and the protocol agreement that Kitsilis had put in front of us. Yeah. So, we rely on our hereditary chiefs in that group, Lusa Hohoia, to represent our interests when it comes to our territory and our rights and title.
Bruce, what is Kikala looking for in terms of accommodation? Because, another piece to this is that Kikala is not the only nation who's having some challenges with this situation. I know Lac-O-Lams has also been very vocal on this situation. But what is Kikala hoping, ideally, to get in terms of an accommodation?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and I don't really want to go into specifics. But we're looking for something that is quite honestly just fair. We know where the provincial government is in terms of their ability to put together an offer that includes lands, crown lands, that includes financial components, and also might include co-management components that are consistent with their own legislation under GRIPA. So, they've come well short of meeting our expectations in terms of their compensation and accommodation, and we'll continue those negotiations.
Bruce, just the last thing for you. This is not the first go-around for a lot of this business. There are some treaty negotiations and these types of discussions that have been going on for decades, if not longer. Yeah. We could go back to contact even. But oftentimes, a lot of this ends up in litigation in the courts. With what you've heard, the response from the governments and also from your neighbors there, from Kitsilis, do you see this going that direction? And if so, how can this be resolved in a timely manner? Because obviously, Kitsilis is getting very close to seeing this Bill 21 going to the legislature, which after that, obviously, will make it much more difficult to see some accommodations. But where do you see this going at this point?
That's a very, very good point, Dan. And that's why we're calling for the pause. We're calling for the pause for BC on their legislation to allow us the space to put those pieces together. The two main pieces to talk about, the relationship and the protocol agreement with Kitsilis and the agreement, the accommodation agreement with BC and Canada. Unfortunately, where I see this going on its current trajectory is the courts. Now, let me make it very clear. Kikala does not want to end up in court on this. We respect Kitsilis' right. We respect any First Nation's right to do the best for their people. Unfortunately, in this case, it's going to affect Kikala rights and title. And so we need the time and the space to come to those agreements. We think that our free, prior, and informed consent package includes protocol agreement with the Kitsilis Nation and a fair accommodation agreement with Canada and BC. Who knows what will happen down in the future, because treaties, are forever. But if we can get some of those pieces in place now, have a higher probability of avoiding court. However, like I said, unfortunately, given the current trajectory, yeah, we might be forced to challenge the government or challenge Kitsilis in court.
Okay, Bruce, we'll leave it there for now. There's much more we could discuss, but I am much obliged to you for answering my questions, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate your time.
That was Bruce Watkinson from Kitkatla in Prince Rupert. Coming up next, Pam joins Junior Emergency Support Services in Telkwa.
There should be enough signs.
We need a reception center signage.
From the entry, there should be some sort of sign saying evacuees should enter over at this area.
We always have them on the road here. We always have them on the highway.
By Tim
Hortons. So yes. Platoon 1 has gone clockwise, so you guys can go counterclockwise around the building.
On a Thursday night in Smithers and Telkwa, a group of people scanned the perimeter of the Telkwa Community Hall and Smithers Christian Reformed Church to identify hazards, blind spots, and potential signage needed as part of their Emergency Support Services program training. Emergency Support Services, or ESS, are the community volunteers that provide short-term support in a compassionate manner following disasters ranging from a single house fire to large evacuations caused by emergencies like wildfires or floods. Tonight's training is setting up a reception center for evacuees. After signing in, the lieutenants call their platoons into order and they start their assignment of walking around the building, marking down signage needed, doors or access points that could be a barrier for people with difficulty walking, even areas to smoke or let pets relieve themselves outside.
Was it worth thinking about?
Yes. Yeah.
Why? What kinds of things did you guys notice?
If there's an emergency in the building and there's hundreds of people in there, where are they all going to go if they all got to run out, right? Like, where are they going to muster?
And that is exactly what today is about. It's about looking at that pre-planning and thinking about what are the pieces of signage, information that we're missing out of what we have, that we can get organized and have in our reception center.
People come in, they got to know where the exits are, where to go in case of an evacuation.
Leading the reception center training is Audrey McKinnon.
I'm Deputy Director for Buckley Emergency Support Services. I have been with ESS now for 8.5 years.
Can I say something that I noticed with our group is like, really, it's like 4 years, 2 years, a couple of months sort of thing. Why is that? Is that because once you volunteer, you usually graduate?
So when we first started, we had quite a number of seniors, retirees that were working on our team, and they have aged out of our program.
Uh-huh.
They have been amazing. So our oldest member was 80 years old.
Wow.
And was doing just an incredible job, but you know, obviously had other life plans. We are all volunteers except for our director, and so the on-call shifts are probably the hardest.
So how do you think that it works with the junior ESS? Why did it work here?
I think one of the things that we see is that youth want to be involved and want to be involved in a meaningful way, in something that feels meaningful. Definitely during response, this is a place where they can come and they can learn all kinds of skills. And I know for many of them who are thinking about any kind of responder or medical programs later on, it's a stepping stone into doing this kind of work where they might not be able to already jump in and, you know, try things out with ambulance, or you know, there's no way they can go on paramedic calls, and for fire they're too young, and so this starts to dip their toe into what is this world of emergency work.
What recruitment did you do differently that the rest of the province hasn't been able to do successfully?
Aww. This is where you talk to Director Herzog. Okay. He is, I think, the magic behind a lot of the recruitment and really going to social media platforms. He's very active in terms of going to where the youth are. One of the best campaigns we had was actually when we put stuff up at Smithers Brewery, and so really getting a different sector of the public who might be interested and not know anything about us.
What's unique about the Bulkley Valley ESS is the addition of 5 teenagers who are currently training alongside Emergency Support Services volunteers in their 30s, 40s, and up to their 70s.
My name's Erica, and I'm 16.
My name is Peyton, and I'm 17.
My name is Lily, and I'm 16 years old.
My name's Addie, and I'm 17.
My name's Nicole, and I'm 18.
Each junior ESS volunteer credits Director Herzog as their reason for getting involved.
So my mom saw something that Director Herzog put out onto the Facebook page about the youth, the junior program. That's how I got involved with it.
High school, Director Herzog teaches a high school course that I took.
I was also recruited through Director Herzog's high school class.
Yep.
Again, I'm also really interested in healthcare, and it's just given me like a whack of opportunities, and it's really good on resume for volunteer and everything like that, but also just for the experience.
Do you all want to be in healthcare, law enforcement, or what's kind of your ultimate goal?
I am going to be a nurse.
Nice.
I would like to go and be a paramedic.
Mm-hmm. I'm honestly not too sure yet, but I know I want to go somewhere in the medical field.
Sure, yeah.
I'm interested in paramedic.
I'd like to be a doctor.
This spring, the Bulkley Valley Junior ESS went to Kamloops to present the Junior ESS program from their point of view to a crowd of over 100 emergency support service managers, directors, and crews. This responsibility is a big undertaking, both physically and mentally, and they were able to share that from their perspective.
Through this program, quite a few of us now have gotten to the first responders course. So it's really cool, just like the opportunities that I can bridge and like just talking publicly speaking to like 100 people in general is not something that I do like as a 16-year-old. So it's honestly a phenomenal experience.
For me, I went over a lot of experiences that I was also exposed to through ESS. Mm-hmm. I talked about a mass casualty scenario that we did through, I don't know if you've heard about it.
Were you one of the people in the airplane?
Yeah. I wasn't in the airplane. I was like stuck in the forest in a ditch
for
an hour. But you know, the airplane would have been cool. And then I went over like the app we use, Active Alert, to help people kind of realize that you're not alone in the scenario. Everyone is interconnected. So the juniors aren't left kind of floundering. They're very cared for when we're in ESS.
When we're on scenes, we need supervision by an officer or a senior responder. We can't respond to any calls involving fatalities or serious injuries. And
when you say respond to calls, but you don't mean just like answering the actual call, like dispatching, you're going to call?
We go to the scene, yes.
To the scene.
And we go and we stay with the evacuee, we provide rehab for the firefighters, we are on scene for all the structure fire calls. Mm-hmm. And so juniors are allowed to do that, but we have to be under supervision for that.
Erica, Peyton, Lily, Addie, and Nicole are planning their lives now for a future that is unknown. As you heard, they're aiming to work in healthcare, paramedics, and law enforcement. 16 may seem young to start working alongside first responders in a crisis, but the world is changing fast due to climate change and a slew of health crises, and this group of teenagers are doing something about it. Here's Director Matt Herzog.
And then in 2023, we started the first, like we created a policy and a designated program for junior responders. And they're just the newest members to be on. So some of them have been on longer than others.
Okay.
But in total, we've had 18 teenagers through the program since 2018.
So before we go on calls, there's a training period. How long is it? Is it like six months? So there's a six-month training period where we take like online Justice Institute courses that prepare us for using like the emergency response tool or evacuee registration and assistance tool. Mm-hmm. So we have the knowledge we need. We also have our uniforms, which make us feel more prepared. So when we go on scene, we have the PPE we need. Mm-hmm. And we haven't brought them today. We have grab-and-go bags. Okay. Which we should stock with 72 hours worth of equipment. So in the case of a call, we have the equipment and what we need so we can pick it up. And in those bags, I have things that I feel like I'm going to need. So like a phone charger, a book for like comfort and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's how you really prepare.
Training is crucial. Over 6 months, junior ESS learn essential skills, including first aid, CPR, and how to operate communication tools like radios. ESS volunteers also get introduced to the incident command system, which helps them to understand how to coordinate during emergencies. But the program isn't just about training, it's about getting involved in the community.
So the level of care that they're getting right now is a first responder program that's designed for firefighters. It's a 70-hour course. So this one just gives them the very basic, I wouldn't say basic skills anymore because we're giving epinephrine and glucagon and other really complex drugs. It's very close to the EMR program, but it's just a step down from that. But with that, they're able to go and do community programs. Nicole was out running around. Addie was out last year doing first aid at the fall fairgrounds with the fire department. So it gets them involved in other things as well. They get student licenses from the province, from the Emergency Medical Assistance Licensing Board. So now they're actually able to go out and practice in the field and get some of those skills. And we're just breaking now into providing rehab for firefighters on the ground. To do that, we need more volunteers. We can do both registering evacuees and supporting them and supporting firefighters.
Yeah.
And we need volunteers across our region.
As they progress, juniors can transition to full responder roles once they turn 19 or graduate high school, lifting any restrictions that they had as a junior. The junior ESS program in Smithers is not just preparing youth for emergency response, it's also building a foundation for the future of healthcare in the community. Through training, mentorship, and community involvement, these young responders are equipped to make a meaningful impact when disaster strikes.
The big message here during our presentation is you aren't just working with high school students, you're working with people who have proven to be accountable, responsible, and those who have a genuine commitment to their communities.
Thank you to Bulkley Valley Emergency Support Services Director Matt Herzog, as well as the junior ESS, Erica, Nicole, Peyton, Lily, and Addie for their time.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.